Or should perhaps I say, good evening, brothers and sisters. Because after all, yeah, it's head on. Monday through Friday, it's head on. Monday through Friday, I'm Bob Kincaid. But around here, well, you know, around here, Wednesdays are a little bit special because, of course, around here, Wednesdays, well, that means prayer meeting night here at Head On.
On this every other Wednesday afternoon discussion club, we are going to have more to discuss on this every other Wednesday afternoon than we ever had on any other every other Wednesday afternoon.
Ain't it the truth? So, you know, I've got a couple of Wednesday night kind of stories for you. But more to the point, or where we should probably start, it's getting a little dietarily tough. Dear Leader keeps running out and making these speeches, and then I have to sit and cut sound bites from them. And I mean, I'm getting to where I'm listening to that man. I'm getting to where I'm drinking Pepto-Bismol like a wino under the bridge drinking Thunderbird. It's just nauseating. Same speech, you know, 32 mentions of the word violent extremist, 22 terrorists, 9 liberties, 11 freedoms, and 62 dozen 9/11s. Same speech, different day. Today it was at the Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars, and while it was a you can't come in here unless you're willing to worship Dear Leader affair like they all are, somehow among these relatively intelligent people, the mad rushes of applause and the rampant Zig Heiling weren't quite as noticeable as they have been in some of the other fora in which he's made this same speech. But you can tell the desperation from the fact that he's making this speech. This is the fourth time. It started out, it was only going to be a trilogy. Now what is it, a quadrology? Quartet? Nah, dummy, it's a quartet. Now it's a quartet of speeches. And it is. It's the same thing over and over again. However, I have to tell you, if you don't have the stomach to listen to him shuffling and stumbling and slurring his way through the speech, you can go to whitehouse.gov and read the transcript. But be forewarned. The transcript that is there allegedly as today's speech is not what he said. It's rearranged and rewritten, and it bears no real resemblance to what he said today. I mean, the same hallmarks are there. 9/11, Dear Leader. Just like last Sunday's Doonesbury, in which Gary Trudeau pointed out that 9/11 is the catch-all response, you know, the college coach and the quarterback. What happened out there? You know, 56 to nothing. 9/11, coach. It's the catch-all excuse now. Senator Frist, why did you dissect all those kitty cats? 9/11.
I don't think that's funny.
Well, I do. I mean, it goes on and on and on. For instance, since it is prayer meeting night, our friend and, our FOB, that's friend of Bob, Peter in Tallahassee, noticed this story from the WashingtonPost.com, a religious protest largely from the left. That's the headline, the title, whatever. Subhead, listen to this one. Conservative Christians say fighting cuts in poverty programs is not a priority. You know, dozens upon dozens of references by Jesus in the New Testament, in Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, about not treating the poor like crap. Not a single reference about what happens when the lights go out, or the, you know, oil lamp goes out, whatever, you know, his day and age. Nothing about how you know, what goes on in the hovel in the way of sex. Nope. But, as the article points out, when hundreds of religious activists got arrested today, and they did, there was no Jerry Falwell there, crying out in Jesus' name, that Congress not stick a shiv in the collective back of the poor? He wasn't there. Good God, have you seen that man? He's beginning to look like Orson Welles. I expect, who was it, Gallo, that Welles worked for, shilled for in the latter days of his life? It's a wonderful wine. I expect Falwell to get called out on that gig. He's
not a Christian!
Or that either. Falwell's as big as Orson Welles. He's as big as Raymond Burr. He's huge. He's turning into Falwell the Hutt, Jabba the Falwell, whatever you want to call him. And he couldn't be troubled to stand out in Washington, D.C. in the cold today and do what arguably Jesus would have done and cry out for a little bit of common compassion for the poor.
But you have to understand, Bob, the last time he had pneumonia, the laying on of hands didn't work, so he can't go out in the cold.
Well, yeah, and I guess they don't make... what's that thing they use in the hospital, the Hoyer lift? Just about have to have one of those just to try... Well... He's disgusting, Falwell is. His greed, his greed comes out of the pores in his skin. You can see it. Start with pictures of him back when he came to prominence in the Reagan era. Hey, he was a husky fella. I'm a husky fella. But he just, you can see the toxicity and the poison just building up in his system. One of these days he's going to blow up like that dude in The Meaning of Life by Monty Python. Go and get me a bucket. But, of course, he's well fed. He can't be troubled to advocate for the poor or the least among us. Focus on the family, James Dobson. They say it's a matter of priorities. And their priorities are abortion, same-sex marriage, and seating judges who will back their position against those practices. Paul Hetrick, he's a spokesman for Focus on the Family. That's James Dobson out there in Colorado Springs, Colorado, making that place not a fit place to live. Paul Hetrick says, it's not a question of the poor not being important or that meeting their needs is not important, but whether or not a baby is killed in the seventh or eighth month of pregnancy, that is less important than help for the poor. We would respectfully disagree with that. Not a word in the New Testament about abortion. Not a word. Plenty about not screwing over the poor, not a word about abortion, but Paul Hetrick would respectfully disagree with that. Because unborn babies are more important than hungry-born ones. I hate him. God help me. I hate them. Because those unborn babies are so worried about, why do I even bother? The minute those babies are born, the morally bankrupt, ethically dead, right-to-life movement doesn't care anymore. So they couldn't be bothered to show up in Washington today. Let's take a break. We got to do the speech next. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
You walk in well-lit areas. Stay clear of parked vans. Someone approaches you and you cross to the other side of the street. Your cell phone is ready. The numbers for help saved on speed dial. You lock the door behind you. Once, twice, maybe three times. Now you feel safe, secure. You think you've made the right choices to protect yourself. Think again. Because if you're not making healthy choices, you could be one of the nearly 2 out of 3 women killed by cancer, diabetes, heart disease, or stroke. So eat right, get active, don't smoke, see your doctor, and live. Learn to protect yourself from yourself at 1-866-399-6789 or visit us at everydaychoices.org. A message from the American Cancer Society, American Diabetes Association, American Heart Association, and the Ad Council.
Hey, have you got a minute? I'm going to say a word. You tell me what comes to mind. Are you ready?
Okay.
Tchaikovsky.
Gesundheit. Okay, what's the word?
No, see, that is the word. What does Tchaikovsky make you think of?
I don't know. Allergy season?
Hey there, how you doing?
What's up?
Who's Martha Graham?
She invented the graham cracker.
No kidding.
Yeah. Before her, there was only soda crackers.
Hard to imagine. Hey, young lady.
Yeah?
Does the name Man Ray mean anything to you?
Duh. The Man Ray is a kind of poisonous jellyfish, and it lives in the Gulf of Mexico.
Aha.
It's very deadly.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Tchaikovsky's music, Martha Graham's dance, and Man Ray's photography. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
Miners and mine operators understand the dangers inherent in working at a mine site. They also know how to avoid those hazards, but will they do it? Hello, I'm Bob Friend with the Mine Safety and Health Administration. Many recent fatalities in the mining industry have resulted from bad safety decisions. For example, one victim fell from an elevated platform because he was not wearing a safety line. Tragedies like this don't have to happen if everyone in the mining workplace thinks about the job and makes the right decision. Safety begins with you. If you're about to perform electrical work, lock out and tag out before you start the work. Make the right decision. If you're a truck driver, you can choose whether to wear the seat belt. Make the right decision. MSHA's message to you is make the right decision in the mining workplace. Decide to be safe. Thank you for listening.
Welcome back. Coming up on 20 minutes after the hour, let's go straight to the phones. Jim's with us. Hey, Jim, you're head on. What you got for me tonight?
Hey, how are you?
Doing good.
I understand it's sleety over there.
A little bit, yeah.
Really? That's all we need. Oh, listen.
It's going to get worse tonight. I mean, it gets nastier and nastier according to the weather forecast.
Well, you know, guess who's moving tomorrow?
Who?
Steve O'Brien.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and to someplace off Johnstown Road. So if any of you people out there want to call in and offer to help, I'm sure your phone lines are going to be just overloaded, so Mr. Self-Reliant.
Oh, you're harsh, Jim.
He'd be moving back into his mama's house. Mm-hmm. You know, I just thought I'd give a little PSA there for Stevie.
Well, okay.
But anyway, I noticed on C-SPAN just a few minutes ago that the Senate had just cut $100 million from the food stamp program.
Oh, yeah.
And so, whereas now...
That's what this protest in front of the Capitol was about today by some members of the so-called religious left.
You know, oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, a number of people were arrested. They had... The Capitol Police had chartered buses to carry them away once they were arrested and bagged and tagged.
Oh, they were there to protest the cuts to the social program?
Yeah, yeah. And in fact, there was a protest, I got a notice today from West Virginia Citizens Action Group. I'm sure Patriots for Peace was probably involved, too. I don't know. Generally the decent people protested in front of Shelley, you know, Archmore in a bad wig, Capito's office down in Charleston as well.
What'd you call her?
Archmore in a bad wig.
What do you mean?
Well, I mean, she looks a little bit more like her daddy Arch every day. I mean, she's just Archmore in a bad wig.
I see, I see. I get you. I'm sorry. I'm a little slow on the uptake tonight. Yeah, she's an old lady, isn't she?
She's kind of a reverse picture of Dorian Gray, if you get right down to it.
Oh, God. I hate to see that portrait before you say it. My God. That's just way too much information tonight on that subject. But, you know, now they're going to slash $100 million from the food stamp program. But now they're requesting an additional $50 billion for Iraq, mm-hmm. and in addition to that, a sulfur bomb for $100 billion, which carries us up now to $500 billion or $500 billion with a B.
Yeah.
I mean, where is this money coming from? Why are they having to spend so much money on these people like this? I don't understand it.
Listen, the communist Chinese government laughs a little bit harder every time they buy another T-bill from us.
Well, that's where, in other words, yeah, because really they own all of our treasury bills.
Yeah, for the most part. I mean, we've hung our future on the Pacific Rim.
Well, that is a very foolish thing to do. And, you know, there's always the ones who said they're going to come in and cut the deficit. I remember Reagan back in 1981 screaming he was going to cut the deficit.
Well, but
when he left office, we were $4 trillion in the hole.
Right. And now under Bush, and it's one of the scariest statistics I have ever read, and it's just true, Bush has run up a greater deficit than that of every other president of the United States combined, Jim, combined.
Well, you know, what can you expect? I mean, Ronald Reagan was pretty callous. He said, unless you're making $100K a year, you're broke. And that was back in 1981.
Yeah.
Now, has Bush ever had to balance a checkbook? I doubt it.
I don't think he's ever been allowed to have a checkbook, Jim, let alone balance it.
Well, I mean, you know, he's never known the responsibility of worrying about paying the rent, the mortgage, the lights, food, this, that, and the other.
No.
And, you know, he has no concept of how it is to live, just like his father back in the 1989 election against Bill Clinton.
When he didn't know what
a barcode was.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, that's how far removed these people are. Or when his father, when he was talking to somebody, said that he was driven to school every day when he was a boy to go to prep school, and they said, well, you better not mention that. I mean, these people have been mollycoddled all their lives.
Well, wasn't it Bush? Wasn't it Bush the first who said said he didn't do that compassion thingy? Wasn't that him?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, called it a thingy. You know, the number one human trait that was worthy of heavenly adoration according to Jesus Christ, and it's a thingy to a Bush, a thingy.
Well, you know, the only thing that I will say about George Bush 41, the old man was, he did seem to have appreciation for the civil service. Now, I remember I did see that. He had a documentary done for Office of Personnel Management, and he did seem to at least appreciate the federal workers who made the country enable it to, you know, function. But then again,
well, I think there's a lot more of mommy in George W. than there is of daddy. He's got that really mean-spirited, hateful, nasty streak that she seems to manifest. Remember when she said she couldn't trouble her beautiful mind wondering how many people had died in the war? Remember that?
Yeah.
Well, that's the same way it is with Bush. He's just hateful. He's callous. He's cruel. You know, I harp on it and I beat on it. But, you know, there is a psychological marker in somebody who grows up enjoying torturing frogs.
You know, these people can be so beguiling because I met her on the afternoon of August. When did Saddam invade Kuwait? 2nd or the 8th of 1990?
I can't remember right offhand, but yeah, it's in the first week or so of
August.
And
it was in the very same day that Bush 41 nominated Souter for the Supreme Court. Because I was at a convention over at Keybridge Marriott, and they bussed us over to the White House to meet Ms. Bush because she was the education lady. And she was perfectly charming. I mean, just as charming as she could be. And disarmingly so. And she was just like every other grandmother that she loved to sit down and play bridge with and stuff like this. But apparently, there's a lot of, let me put it this way, there's a steel claw beneath that velvet glove, and I'll tell you, it's pretty sharp. And if she makes statements like that, and I don't think she's going to improve with age.
No. Well, I mean, she proved after Katrina that she hadn't improved, what she proved was that that wasn't a misspeak, that wasn't a miscue. That was just, that's how they are. You know, look, Jenna Bush, the twins. The media is leaving it alone because, well, you know, there are betters and we don't need to talk about it. But that little girl lost her wallet while out running around with a well-known Coke dealer.
Well, I mean, the apples don't fall too far off the tree, do they?
Yeah, I mean, her ID was in the, I mean, there's no guesswork about it. There was $1,000 in the wallet, her ID was in the wallet, and the guy, and the, you know, it's not like somebody, you know, Oliver Twist didn't come up and filch it out of her purse and give it to the Coke dealer.
Did they find the money in the wallet, or was it gone?
Oh, no, it was all there.
And where did she lose it?
She lost it with a Coke, hanging out with a Coke dealer.
Oh, well, like I say, her father enjoyed that nose candy. I guess she inherited his taste for it, too.
Yeah. I mean, there's no, you know, people have said from time to time, Jim, well, you know, why aren't the Bush twins in the military? They couldn't pass the urine test.
Yeah, I'm afraid they would pop hot for Coke every time they tried to pass it. That's for sure. They would pop right hot right for it.
Yeah.
He's tapping at the maps all the time. You know, it's incredible.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, they call these tests, and this is, and I'm not talking about applicants. I'm talking about staff people.
Oh yeah.
I mean, I won't mention names, but there was one individual, and you know, every time they had one of those tests, she would pop hot for it, and you know, they put her out.
My God.
And so, you know.
But your initial thesis, Jim, is correct. If we can, $500 billion we've thrown down the rat hole in Iraq, and we're going to balance that on the backs of people who already don't have enough to eat.
And they have, and the Senate has cut $100 million from the food stamp program, and I don't know. Now, what do you know about this Patriot Act? What are they doing with it?
Well, there's an attempt to amend it and make it a little bit more tolerable. The vote is on Friday in the Senate. That I know.
I've called everybody I know to ask them not to allow this law to stand as written, but they're going to, I understand there's 16 elements that are pretty onerous they want to keep.
Well, and what's more, and I've got the story later, I'm glad you brought it up, Pat Roberts, the chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee, Republican from Kansas, was blathering on and on about, I don't know why we want to tie the hands of our law enforcement, blah, 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 blah. You know, nobody's going to, and I've got it here. Well, but what it boils down to, an NBC investigation, my buddy Victor emailed me the story, so did, I believe, Gene. Turns out NBC has found that the Defense Department is, in fact, doing secret surveillance on private citizens, and as well as I believe the FBI, perhaps, and you know, but we don't need to take a closer look at the Patriot Act. I mean, you can always trust the FBI, can't you?
Well, I mean, you know, I've had my phone tapped, and I've had things done. I just told these people at DIA when I had to go through clearance and things like that. I said, you know, my life's like an open book. I'm just looking for somebody who's smart enough to read it.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's just the way they are. I mean, they're going to find out everything, and if they have to tap your phone without a warrant or whatever, you know, they don't care, or a court order.
Sure.
I mean, and pretty soon, I mean, we're going to be living in a police state, and, you know.
I submit to you that we already are.
And I call the people. I call Ray Hall's office, and I call Byrd's office, and Rockefeller's office, and I said, look, I said, there have been too many incursions into our liberties as it is. I said, new legislation needs to be crafted to repair these incursions into our personal liberties. I said, you know, this is not a good thing. I said, our rights are being seriously abridged. And they said, we'll pass your comments on, which is all you can do.
It really is.
And sign the petition. Well, listen, I'm going to get off here.
You
by
take
the way,
care.
Jerry Falwell, he does look like, you remember, you see Live and Let Die?
Oh, yeah.
Remember Mr. Big when he swallowed the air bullet?
Oh, perfect image. Perfect image.
Well,
Jim.
Maybe he'll just come up out of the water one day in his private swimming pool. He'll just bust.
One may hope. Take care, Jim. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Watch out for the ice.
Okay. Oh, yeah. I'm staying home tomorrow.
All right. Take care.
Out here.
All right. Let's take our break, come back. Let's talk a little bit about the Patriot Act. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
I found out my jeans were made using child labor in sweatshops. I wrote a letter to the company saying, reconsider your labor practices. A few months later, I get a letter back saying, thanks for being a loyal customer, and they included a coupon for a 25% discount on their jeans. So I got smart, wrote letters every day to all the stores that carry the brand, asking them to stop supporting the companies who use child labor in sweatshops. And I just kept getting letters back, thanking me for my concerns, and more coupons for more discounts on more jeans. So I'm telling my friend about it, and she flips out, saying that between all the letters and coupons, some paper company cut down a small forest, driving off 2 indigenous tribes, hundreds of endangered animals, killing thousands of plant species, some of which may have contained vaccines for HIV, cancer, and syphilis. Meanwhile, the guys cutting down the trees are 13-year-old kids who work night and day for months just to save up enough money to buy a pair of jeans made by child labor in sweatshops.
Saving the world isn't easy, but saving a life is. Just one pint of blood can save up to 3 lives. Visit bloodsaves.com to learn more. This public service announcement was brought to you by the Ad Council.
When you have a stroke, you may not even notice it right away. But then, time passes, and the symptoms get worse. 1 minute you feel fine, and the next, your speech could be slurred or not make sense. One side of your body might become numb. You might see double. You drop the TV remote because you can't hold up your arm. That's because after a stroke, every minute you don't get help is another minute that your brain is being starved of oxygen. The warning signs of a stroke include sudden numbness or weakness of the face, arm, or leg, sudden trouble seeing, speaking, or understanding. If you experience any of these warning signs, call 911 immediately, because time lost is brain lost. Visit strokeassociation.org or call 1-888-4-STROKE today. A public service announcement from the American Stroke Association and the Ad Council.
The streets are filled with laughter and light, and the music of the season, and the merchants' windows are all bright with the faces of the children, and the families hurrying to their homes as the sky darkens and freezes. We'll be gathering around their hearths and tables, giving thanks for God's graces and the birth of the rebel Jesus. Oh, they're called by the Prince of Peace, and they're called by the Savior, and they pray to Him upon the sea. And in every bold endeavor, and they fill His churches with their pride and gold, as their faith in Him increases. But they've turned the nature that I worship in from a temple to a robber's den. In the words of the rebel Jesus, thank you.
Okay. Now, Jim referenced this fight over the Patriot Act. As I said, this afternoon, Pat Roberts, who is the chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee, he's the guy who's responsible for the fact that the whole 9/11 intelligence failure screw-up report still hasn't been put out, because, of course, it would be critical of the Republicans in control. And, well, we simply can't have that now, can we? But part and parcel of the concerns with the Patriot Act are these national security letters. You remember those? The ones where they drop a letter on somebody seeking records about you, me, anybody. Nobody gets to know about it. They drop the letter on somebody. And there's an injunction contained in the letter saying, by God, if you tell somebody that we're asking about your records, we will ship you to Guantanamo. Okay? That's that, and the library searches. You know, what little old lady librarian with the horn rimmed glasses and the sweater and the little chain on the glasses and all that's sitting at the reference desk ever dreamed that she would wind up being on the front lines of the fight to save American freedom? But she is. Because another part of the Patriot Act says that what you take, you, me, my kids, for God's sakes, what they take out of the library is subject to scrutiny by the secret police, the FBI. I mean, it is what it is. The FBI, Federal Bureau of Investigation, my left hind foot, they're the secret police, and you know it. And as a consequence of that, there is still a fight brewing in the Senate. Do what you can. Call your senator. Write your senator. Email your senator. Even if they're Republicans, there's a chance that they might listen. But this is the best part. Today, in his yammering on, Pat Roberts said that, in essence, he said we ought to just reauthorize the Patriot Act as it is because he's not aware of anybody abusing its provisions.
These objectives, not timetables set by politicians in Washington, will drive our force levels in Iraq.
But we have yet to find any evidence of abuse or overreaching with respect to these or any other provisions of the Patriot Act.
Now, okay, that's prologue. That's a little fits and starty, but that's okay. Because guess what? As I mentioned earlier, an MSNBC investigation, a secret 400-page Defense Department document obtained by NBC News lists, among other things, a meeting in Lake Worth, Florida, as a threat. And more than 1,500 suspicious incidents across the country over a recent 10-month period. Now, this meeting in Lake Worth, Florida, Al-Qaeda, you think? Some sort of nefarious cell of brown-skinned people plotting the rental of the Winnebagos filled with Timothy McVeigh-style explosives and driving them into the White... No. A year ago, at a Quaker meeting house in Lake Worth, Florida, a small group of activists met to plan a protest of military recruiting at local high schools. What they didn't know was that their meeting had come to the attention of the U.S. military. The Defense Department document is the first inside look at how the U.S. military has stepped up intelligence collection inside this country since 9/11, which now includes the monitoring of peaceful anti-war and counter-military recruitment groups. Let that sink in. And let's hear from Senator Pat Roberts again. What'd he say? No, Senator Pat Roberts, right there.
But we have yet to find any evidence of abuse or overreaching with respect to these or any other provisions of the Patriot Act.
Okay, Senator Roberts, I think we've just found an abuse and an overreaching. Quakers? The Pentagon is spying on the Quakers? The peaceful, we wouldn't hurt a fly people? The Pentagon? Oh, my God. Do you understand? Well, never mind. The Quakers. I attended several meetings of the peace group over in Beckley a year or so ago and more. Guess what? If you did too, you're probably in a dossier now. Have you ever stood with West Virginia Patriots for Peace? The Pentagon thinks you're a threat to security. Nah, not so much the Arabs renting taking the flying lessons. You know, they saw that happen. Nah, never mind. So what if they want to learn to fly planes, but they don't give a damn about learning how to land them? What's that mean? Huh, silly old Arabs. But now, a bunch of liberals and progressives and, you know, people who take that whole Jesus thing seriously, sitting around talking about how to end slaughter in the world and, you know, singing the occasional verse of Kumbaya, there's a threat. There's a threat. MSNBC.com has the article. Lisa Myers is the correspondent. Oh, God. The Department of Defense declined repeated requests by NBC News for an interview. The database. Listen carefully, because really, if you have ever so much as said a peep against this war, my God, my file must be as thick as the Manhattan phone directory by now. If you've ever made a peep against this war, well, the database includes about 4 dozen anti-war meetings or protests. Oodles of names. And you know what? It's illegal what they're doing. 1982, guidelines that were adopted by the DOD then put limits on what they can do, but, well, there are 20 references in the database to U.S. citizens or U.S. persons. Well, maybe. It's only 20. It's 20 freaking Quakers! Quakers! And then some, former senior DOD intelligence officials, they're concerned. One fella, 30-year career DOD official, former Air Force colonel, he says the intelligence collection isn't justified. But remember, Senator Roberts doesn't think that anybody's ever abused the Patriot Act. Of course, being from Kansas, Senator Roberts probably thinks that Adam and Eve rode to church on the back of a dinosaur, too. I mean, there's a lot of squirrely things going on in Kansas, and one of them is Pat Roberts. But just as you pay attention to this debate about the Patriot Act, when you hear the right-wing fascists like Roberts, I believe there is every good reason in the world for the FBI to spy on everybody. Just remember where he's coming from. I don't throw the word fascist around casually. I actually know what it means. I have relatives who fought against it and died fighting against it. It's pretty serious business to me, and it should be, wherever it arises, it should be cut out like a cancer. So, you know, this is fascism. When the Department of Defense is spying on people who just want to stop warfare, when the people who want to stop the bloodshed become the enemies of those who want the bloodshed to continue, well, you're pretty much having an eyeball-to-eyeball conversation with fascism now, aren't you? This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Hey, Hey, friends, Eric Estrada here. Just like you, I'm really into engines, but there's something else that I'm into even more. Taking care of the planet. I bet you didn't know that motor oil from one oil change dumped in a drain or on the ground can contaminate 1 million gallons of fresh water. That means that if we don't recycle it, we could be drinking it. So take your used oil to your nearest recycling center or call toll-free 1-800-CLEANUP. Remember, if you dump it, you'll drink it.
Want to fight childhood asthma? Then fight it with a scrub brush and a hot soapy towel. Even in the neatest and tidiest homes, if there's so much as a crumb to eat or a drop to drink, household pests like bugs and mice will do all that they can to get it. Creepy crawlies like bugs and mice are unpleasant enough as it is, but they're more than just a nuisance for kids with asthma because they can actually trigger an asthma attack. So, give them a whole lot of nothing. Sweep up crumbs, wipe down tables, scrub dishes before they pile up in the sink, and store leftovers in plastic bags or bowls. Don't leave them so much as one tidbit or nibble, and you can stop a childhood asthma attack before it starts. Discover other simple ways to prevent an asthma attack. Call 1-866-NO-ATTACKS or visit noattacks.org, because no child should feel like a fish out of water. A public service message brought to you by the U.S. EPA, the Ad Council, and this station.
Dad, can I ask you something?
Sure.
There's this girl I kind of like.
Say no more.
You just have to impress her. Okay, but how?
Just, I don't know, pick up a lot of heavy things around her.
Like what?
You know, desks, chairs, people. Grunt if you have to.
Grunt?
Yeah, be like, There you go.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. When you adopt a child from foster care, just being there makes all the difference. To learn more, call 1-888-200-4005. A public service announcement brought to you by Adopt U.S. Kids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
Treat me with understanding. Treat me with respect.
Drug and alcohol addiction is an equal opportunity disease.
Treat me without judgment.
Individuals in recovery come from all walks of life and deserve to be treated with respect for winning one of the hardest battles there is.
Treat me with courtesy.
Treat me with humanity.
Alcohol and drug addiction deserves proper treatment. For drug and alcohol information and treatment referral, call 1-800-662-HELP.
Mrs. Deer, you're in the road again.
Oh, Ranger, I saw headlights and...
I understand.
Hey, so you're working late, huh?
Yeah, Smokey and I were up thinking of ways to remind people to be responsible for fires they start.
So what'd you come up with?
Well, we're going to make some radio commercials featuring a ranger and talking animals.
Little sophomoric, don't you think?
Yeah, so?
Remember, only you can prevent wildfires. A public service message from Smokey Bear, the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ag Council.
Welcome back. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid. The phone number, of course, is 877, the number 4, Head On. That translates to 877-443-2366. Also, 304-658-3333 gets you into the studio as well. Email to Bob at headonradio.com. Now, Dear Leader's Speech. Might as well start it now. We're going to have to get through this. You and me, us. The Woodrow Wilson Institute. The Woodrow Wilson Institute, or International Center for Scholars. That's where he was today for this fourth rendition of this nasty little speech in which he's... Look! In excess of 60% of the American people now know that the war in Iraq was a mistake. I wandered over to and of course this stuff is all informal, a little poll on AOL today. 0% of those responding to the AOL poll thought that the war in Iraq was worth the losses. That says something. But, you know, in large part, like I said, it was the same old again, you know, 19 references to 9/11, same speech. It's all he's got. He's like a pitcher with nothing but a fastball. Or make it worse, he's like a pitcher with nothing but a hanging curve. So, you know, naturally, it's the same old garbage. Saddam caused the war.
He deceived international inspectors, and he denied them the unconditional access they needed to do their jobs. At any point along the way, Saddam Hussein could have avoided war by complying with the just demands of the international community. The United States did not choose war. The choice was Saddam Hussein's.
You got that? You got that? Saddam caused the war. Saddam attacked us. Wait, hey, Saddam attacked us on 9/11. How's that? Is there anybody left in America who still believes this tawdry garbage? One more time.
He deceived international inspectors.
Really?
And he denied them the unconditional access they needed to do
no,
their jobs.
No, he didn't.
At any point along the way, Saddam Hussein could have avoided war by complying with the just demands of the international community. The United States did not choose war. The choice was Saddam Hussein's.
That is just an outright sickening lie. That enough. You know, never mind, I did not have sex with that woman, Miss Lewinsky. Screw that now. For what he said today, that one lone statement right there, that is enough to impeach that man and imprison him. The United States did not choose war. You know, the United Nations called on him to disclose or disarm. He disclosed because, as it turned out, he was already disarmed. He disclosed tons and tons and tons of documents. Do you remember when Dear Leader came out complaining that they were in Arabic? He got documents written in Arabic from an Arabic nation. This is unacceptable. You remember him saying it was unacceptable. And this garbage, this out-and-out filth about how he wouldn't let the inspectors... Well, he used to say he wouldn't even let them in. Then he got called on that. Now it's, well, he wouldn't let them do their jobs. They were doing their jobs. They were begging. They were begging for George not to start the bombing. And in March of 2003, he went on the television and talked about how, I have lost my patience. Remember him losing his patience? Although, I don't know, maybe there's an element of truth in what he said. Maybe the United States didn't choose war. George Bush chose war. The Project for a New American Century chose war. Condi Rice chose war. Donald Rumsfeld chose war. Dick Cheney chose war. Richard Pearl, Wolfowitz, that whole sleazy, bloodthirsty, blood-sucking crowd chose war. I didn't choose war. You didn't choose war. And to be probably more charitable to Congress than what Congress deserves, Congress didn't choose war either. Congress did not exercise its constitutional prerogative to declare war. You know, when the framers of our nation sat down and wrote the Constitution, they wanted to make sure that the executive did not have the power to make war on a political whim or, you know, one individual. I mean, Jefferson, Franklin, Adams, they were dealing with a situation. King George III was still on the throne when the Constitution was ratified. He was on the throne in England, and he was madder than a March hare. So they knew that putting the war power in one individual's hands would not be a good idea. That's why they gave it to the entire Congress. It would have to be debated. It would have to be considered. It would have to go through both houses of Congress. And that's what it means when you say something like, the American people chose... The American people didn't choose war. Well, no, the Congress didn't. George Bush did. Of course, we know from people like the former Secretary of the Treasury, Paul... doggone it, it's beyond me. He said in his book, that they were talking about attacking Iraq from the very minute they went into office in January 2001. Richard Clark says the same thing. It has been documented and documented time after time after time after time. George Bush said it before he was even president, that he wanted a war if he ever got to the White House. And he sits there and lies to you and lies to me and says he didn't choose war. And there is some portion of the American people who are still so abjectly lost, so completely drunk on the Kool-Aid. No, he didn't choose the war. That's the thing. We're not being told everything. The American people, we don't get to be told everything, but there was intelligence that Saddam was going to get on a rubber raft with a bomb and a gun and start rowing over, and he's going to kill George Bush personally. And that's why we had to stop him. Jesus. Let's take a break. This is Head On.
Never to pray, studying about that good old way, and who shall wear the starry crown? Good Lord, show me the way. Oh, sisters, let's go down, let's go down, come on down. Oh, sisters, let's go down, down in the river to pray.
Gruff the Crime Dog here with my nephew Scruff. Get a pencil and write down an important address. It's for the new McGruff comic activity book.
And it's full of me.
The address is...
Scruff McGruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652.
Hey, Scruff McGruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652. Tells you what to do about guns and about bullies and drugs and about strangers who want to give you a ride.
Scruff, scruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652.
And it's full of games and puzzles, too. So for your free copy of my new comic activity book, just write...
Scruff, scruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652.
Not bad.
Can I do it again?
One more time.
Scruff, scruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652.
You'll be helping me take a fight out of crime.
A public service message from this station, the U.S. Department of Justice, the Crime Prevention Coalition, and the Ag Council.
On December 8, 1997, our 7-year-old son, Evan, was murdered after signing up for basketball.
It was very devastating. Just very devastating. And the victims program provided the resources for us to get the counseling that we needed.
Alec was also injured. They helped pay for Alec's cornea transplant.
They stood by us through the court process.
If you or someone you love have been a victim of violent crime, there is help available for you.
Crimevictims.gov.
Why should our children learn another language?
Everybody in the world doesn't speak English.
To succeed in this shrinking world, our children will need to communicate in more than one language.
So you could make new friends from different countries.
For our kids' sake, it's time to speak up for language education. Find out how at yearoflanguages.org.
That makes me confident.
Sponsored by the American Council on the Teaching of Foreign Languages.
Go to sleep, you little babe.
Go to sleep, you little babe.
Your mama's gone away and your daddy's gonna stay. Don't leave nobody but the baby. Go to sleep, you little babe.
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 Everybody's gone in the cotton and the corn. Didn't leave nobody but the baby. Your sweet little babe,
your sweet little babe,
your sweet little babe,
your
and the sugar don't stop. Gonna bring a bottle to the baby. Don't you weep, pretty baby.
Don't you weep, pretty baby.
Don't you weep, pretty baby.
Don't you weep, pretty baby.
She's long gone with the red shoes on. Gonna need another loving baby. Go to sleep, little baby.
Go to sleep, little baby.
Go to sleep, little baby.
Go to sleep, little baby.
You and me and the devil makes three. Don't need no other loving baby. Go to sleep, little baby.
Go to sleep, little baby.
Go to sleep, little baby.
Go to sleep, little baby.
Come lay your bones on the alabaster stones and be my ever-loving baby.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
change after the hour here in our fabulous undisclosed location in the wilds of wonderful West Virginia. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid. You probably know the phone number by now, but it's incumbent upon me to give it out periodically. 877, the number 4, Head On. That's 877-443-2366. Email, of course, to Bob at headonradio.com. My lovely wife, Agnes. Agnes, A-G-N-E-S. Not Angus, Agnes. A-G-N-E-S at headonradio.com. So, yeah, we've got a little bit more sound to go through with Dear Leader. And we'll start that up before the break. You know, I showed you. This is radio, for God's sakes. I played for you. Well, actually, I didn't play it. Agnes played it. How he you know, with a bald face, stood there at the Woodrow Wilson Institute. Now, see, I'm wrong. Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars. There we go. The Woodrow Wilson, you know, that man sought peace, Woodrow Wilson. The idea of George Bush even walking through that doorway is repugnant. But at any rate, he was there at the Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars today. And he said that, it was more the same old claptrap. It was another one, the use of the word freedom. The man doesn't know what it means. It's obvious.
Our efforts to advance freedom in Iraq are driven by our vital interests and our deepest beliefs. America was founded on the principle that all men are created equal. And we believe that the people of the Middle East desire freedom as much as we do.
Did you catch that? That one just slipped by. Didn't even make it. It slid past the speechwriter too. The use of the present tense. The people of the Middle East desire freedom as much as we do. Lord God, we do desire freedom. We are sorely lacking in it in many respects right now. The Patriot Act is one of them. Yeah, since its inception, the Patriot Act has been cited 30,000 plus times for the issuance of one of these national security letters. What I mentioned earlier. Those letters that go out without so much as a by your leave from a judge or anyone else, and contain in them an injunction against the person the records are being sought from saying a word about the fact that they've received one. 30,000 times that's been done. That's well on the way toward KGB behavior, isn't it? Because you know what? There aren't 30,000 Arab terrorists in this country. There aren't 30,000 Quakers, but you can damned well bet that those Quakers that were spied on by the Pentagon, you can just about bet that they were somewhere in there was one of those national security letters for them. And some, you know, interestingly, one of the things that was pointed out, some of the people that are legitimately concerned with the national security business, one of the things that they suggest is that the Pentagon doing this is just wrong. Not from a moral standpoint, but from an organizational standpoint, from a protect the country against the terrorist standpoint. Because when you're busy monitoring the Quakers, odds are you're missing something a lot more significant. Don't you think? I tend to agree with that assessment. And, of course, in the speech today, every speech from Dear Leader now contains a reference to World War II. Today was no different.
As we advance the cause of freedom in Iraq, our nation can proceed with confidence because we have done this kind of work before.
Have we?
World War II. President Harry Truman believed that the way to help bring peace and prosperity to Asia was to plant the seeds of freedom and democracy in Japan. Like today, there were many skeptics.
Yeah, no. No. No, George, no. For starters, what we did in Japan, we did after we won the war. Now, like I said the other night, unless I've missed the parade somewhere, and the ticker tape and the bunting and all of that stuff, we haven't won this war. Of course, we're not going to either, but we won't go into that. No, Japan is not just like Iraq. You know, he went on and blathered on at some length about the fact, you know, we provided democratic There was already a representative body inside Japan. Just like Iraq had a national assembly before we toppled Saddam. Now, Japan's national assembly was subject to the emperor. The Iraqi National Assembly was subject to Saddam. We didn't impose democracy on Germany either. Germany had had representative government for a heck of a long time prior to World War I. Sure they had. Just like the Diet had existed in Japan. You know and I know that these are the maunderings of a desperate man trying to find some meme, trying to find some frame that will stick. But the fact of the matter is, no matter how much he complains, he did start that war. 30,000 people, more or less, are dead. Remember that? Sure you do. But he started it. And the blood, unfortunately, isn't just on his hands. It's on ours. And, I don't know. Is it even worthwhile playing these sound bites? You know what he said. I know what he said. Let's take a break. Yeah, what the heck. I did the work. We might as well listen to him. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
You put your keys between your knuckles. You walk in well-lit areas. Stay clear of parked vans. Someone approaches you and you cross to the other side of the street. Your cell phone is ready. The numbers for help saved on speed dial. You lock the door behind you. Once, twice, maybe three times. Now you feel safe, secure. You think you've made the right choices to protect yourself. Think again. Because if you're not making healthy choices, you could be one of the nearly 2 out of 3 women killed by cancer, diabetes, heart disease, or stroke. So eat right, get active, don't smoke, see your doctor, and live. Learn to protect yourself from yourself at 1-866-399-6789 or visit us at everydaychoices.org. A message from the American Cancer Society, American Diabetes Association, American Heart Association, and the Ad Council.
Hey, have you got a minute?
Huh?
I'm going to say a word. You tell me what comes to mind. Are you ready?
Okay.
Tchaikovsky.
Gesundheit. Okay, what's the word?
No, see, that is the word. What does Tchaikovsky make you think of?
I don't know. Allergy season?
Hey there, how you doing?
What's up?
Who's Martha Graham?
She invented the graham cracker.
No kidding.
Yeah. Before her, there was only soda crackers.
Hard to imagine. Hey, young lady.
Yeah?
Does the name Man Ray mean anything to you?
Duh. The Man Ray is a kind of poisonous jellyfish, and it lives in the Gulf of Mexico.
Aha.
It's very deadly.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be?
Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Tchaikovsky's music, Martha Graham's dance, and Man Ray's photography. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
Miners and mine operators understand the dangers inherent in working at a mine site. They also know how to avoid those hazards, but will they do it? Hello, I'm Bob Friend with the Mine Safety and Health Administration. Many recent fatalities in the mining industry have resulted from bad safety decisions. For example, one victim fell from an elevated platform because he was not wearing a safety line. Tragedies like this don't have to happen if everyone in the mining workplace thinks about the job and makes the right decision. Safety begins with you. If you're about to perform electrical work, lock out and tag out before you start the work. Make the right decision. If you're a truck driver, you can choose whether to wear the seat belt. Make the right decision. MSHA's message to you is make the right decision in the mining workplace. Decide to be safe. Thank you for listening.
Remember that, just in case we ever face to face and make contact. The title held by me, MIB, means what you think you saw, you did not see. So don't break B, what was dead is now gone. Black suit with the black Ray Bans on. Walk a shadow, move in silence. Guard against extraterrestrial violence. But if we ain't on no government list, we straight don't exist. No names and no fingerprints.
18 past. I'm Bob, this is Head On. Your phone calls are welcome. 877, the number 4, Head On. 877-443-2366. Onward and outward and upward and, you know, with dear leader in his speech today. Someone in the speech writing staff is getting hung up on the criticisms, and they're trying desperately to answer them. And even as they try, they fail miserably. It's the usual. Especially, you know, since the last speech, George got called on the carpet by that one lady who said, you know, why do you keep equating 9/11 with the war on Iraq? And he danced around it and avoided it like the plague, didn't answer it, and generally made a monkey of himself. Not a tough task for him. But you can hear a slight shift in the focus in this next cut.
The reality is that the terrorists have been targeting America for years.
Mm-hmm.
Long before we ever set foot in Iraq.
Uh-huh.
We were not in Iraq in 1993 when the terrorists tried to blow up the World Trade Center in New York.
Nope. Sure.
We were not in Iraq in 1998 when the terrorists bombed our embassies in Kenya and Tanzania.
Uh-uh. Well, we were.
We were not in Iraq in 2000 when the terrorists killed 17 American sailors aboard the USS Cole.
That much is true.
There wasn't a single American soldier in Iraq on September the 11th, 2001.
No, there wasn't. There is an element of truth in what he said there, but, you know, that just like in music, there's as much music in the empty spaces as there are in the notes themselves. You have to wonder when you hear a statement like that, the motivation behind making it. What were the empty spaces that led to the writing of those sentences? And by that I mean, do they think that we're all so stupid? We'll just sit there in the pews with our hymnals in our laps and say, that's right, George, you're right. We wasn't in Iraq when they hit the World Trade Center in 1993. Damn, you're brilliant. Is that what they're thinking? Or are they just not that smart? Because with every single event that he ticked off there, the World Trade Center bombing in 1993. Did he mention the Khobar Towers? No, I don't think so. The embassy bombings and the USS Cole. Those all occurred prior to the war in Iraq. But here's the difference. Here's the reason. And I'm sorry, I don't mean to bore anybody. Many of you already know this, but there are so many things. This Bushian spider has so many hairy little legs. And you have to keep connecting them. There are so many dots, to use another analogy. You've got to keep them connected. In all of those instances, those all transpired while we still had American military personnel in the Islamic Holy Land, to wit, Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia. Back when, you know, all of our most hated enemies, have at one point in time been our best buddy. Back when we were arming Osama bin Laden and thought that he was the neatest thing since sliced falafel. We knew that he was a religious fundamentalist. We knew that he had gone to fight the Soviet Union because they were attacking his Muslim brothers. And he was another George Washington back then, wasn't he? And Ronald Reagan would make speeches and, our friends, the Mujahideen in Afghanistan. That was Osama. And we knew that he was absolutely as religiously insane as Pat Robertson or Jerry Falwell or any of the other right-wing the religion industry people in this country. Crazier than a sprayed roach, and we knew it. But we were willing to exploit it because we saw some benefit in it. Just as we knew that Saddam was a brutal dictator who's gassed his own people. Well, we didn't care so much about that when he was gassing the Iranians, too, because we sold him the crap he used to do it. Now, bearing that in mind, all those terrorist strikes that Dear Leader mentioned in his speech in that last soundbite, all of those happened after Osama bin Laden had made it clear that, at least in his twisted, religiously insane mind, because the religiously insane are about the most twisted on earth, he had made it clear time after again that our presence on Saudi soil was a grave offense to him and his Wahhabi pals. And that they would do really nasty things until we got out of Saudi Arabia. What was the first thing that was mentioned after 9/11? You people are in Saudi Arabia. Get out of Saudi Arabia. And just as George Bush put his knee pads on and puckered up for the Chinese over the spy plane incident just a few months after he was in office, he put the knee pads on and puckered up for Osama bin Laden and pulled our troops out of Saudi Arabia. Have we been attacked by Al-Qaeda since? No. So, no. That part didn't have to do with the fact that we were in Iraq because we weren't in Iraq. It had to do with the fact that we were in Saudi Arabia. I don't know precisely how damn dumb these neocon killers are. You know, there are the smart killers out there, the ones that plot and machinate and make plans. And then there are the ones who just giggle while they kill. Or are willing to kill for anything that passes as sufficient motive for them. I'm coming to the conclusion that we're dealing with the second group here. They had a motive. The motive was American hegemony in the Middle East. And 9/11 was the Pearl Harbor that the Project for a New American Century was praying for every night of their lives, morning, noon, and night. It was what they needed. So, when Dear Leader says, we weren't in Iraq then, there wasn't when 9/11 come along, there wasn't a single solitary soldier on Iraqi soil. No, there weren't. And that's not why it went down. And Iraq didn't have a damn thing to do with it. It is about our willingness to just crap all over other cultures, other ways of being, other ways of believing. You know, left to his own devices, frankly, Osama hates the Saudi royal family a hell of a lot more than he hates us. And that might have something, you know, getting the United States out of Saudi Arabia made it, could that possibly have made it a little bit easier for him to take a run at destabilizing the Saudi monarchy? Since he does hate their guts? I don't know, but he's religiously insane, but I think, you know, that side is the crazy like a fox people. Crazy, murderous, bloodthirsty. Our the Bush side, I think they just enjoy the killing. I don't know. God knows, I hate to even contemplate that. But with talk like this, what am I supposed to do? What I'm going to do right now is take a break. This is Head On.
When I found out my jeans were made using child labor in sweatshops, I wrote a letter to the company saying, reconsider your labor practices. A few months later, I get a letter back saying, thanks for being a loyal customer, and they included a coupon for a 25% discount on their jeans. So I got smart, wrote letters every day to all the stores that carry the brand, asking them to stop supporting the companies who use child labor in sweatshops. And I just kept getting letters back, thanking me for my concerns, and more coupons for more discounts on more jeans. So I'm telling my friend about it, and she flips out, saying that between all the letters and coupons, some paper company cut down a small forest, driving off two indigenous tribes, hundreds of endangered animals, killing thousands of plant species, some of which may have contained vaccines for HIV, cancer, and syphilis. Meanwhile, the guys cutting down the trees are 13-year-old kids who work night and day for months just to save up enough money to buy a pair of jeans made by child labor in sweatshops.
Saving the world isn't easy, but saving a life is. Just one pint of blood can save up to 3 lives. Visit bloodsaves.com to learn more. This public service announcement was brought to you by the Ad Council.
When you have a stroke, you may not even notice it right away. But then, time passes, and the symptoms get worse. One minute you feel fine, and the next, your speech could be slurred or not make sense. One side of your body might become numb. You might see double. You drop the TV remote because you can't hold up your arm. That's because after a stroke, every minute you don't get help is another minute that your brain is being starved of oxygen. The warning signs of a stroke include sudden numbness or weakness of the face, arm, or leg, sudden trouble seeing, speaking, or understanding. If you experience any of these warning signs, call 911 immediately, because time lost is brain lost. Visit strokeassociation.org or call 1-888-4-STROKE today. A public service announcement from the American Stroke Association and the Ad Council.
It's the Cup of Joe Report. I'm Joe Vecchio. Hey, how big of a threat am I to the Pentagon? I asked that question in light of a new report by NBC News about how the Pentagon is secretly gathering intelligence on anti-war groups they consider to be threats. A 400-page Department of Defense document obtained by NBC News lists nearly 4 dozen anti-war meetings of protests they consider to be suspicious. Now, I have friends who tell me I tend to overreact a bit when talking about what's been going on in this country, and the fact that I haven't been arrested or disappeared like many at Guantanamo Bay or Abu Ghraib is proof that we still have freedom of speech and things aren't as bad as they seem. Maybe. But the idea of the Pentagon investigating small groups like the one mentioned in Michael Moore's Fahrenheit 9/11 tends to make me a little nervous. Now, maybe they're not planning on arresting us just yet, but who knows what the future will bring. And 15 years ago, I never would have believed that the United States would be so foolish as to invade and occupy a country that didn't pose any clear threat, and yet that's exactly what's happened. Maybe they're right. Maybe I am a threat to the Pentagon or to the White House by speaking my mind. I've certainly made it very clear how I feel about recent events, and I have no desire to retract anything I've said about it. But face it, I'm pretty low on the totem pole, and if they seriously think I'm any kind of threat to them, they're far more paranoid than I am. Now, get back to work. This has been the Cup of Joe Report by Joe Vecchio. Listen to the Cup of Joe radio show, available via streaming audio at cupojoe.blogspot.com.
Know who that is? I'm not going to give that one away. I was amazed when Agnes showed that one to me. It's 26 and a half minutes before the hour. This is Head On. I'm Bob. It's our Wednesday night prayer meeting edition, and we'll believe me, I got some prayer meeting stuff for you. But let's get done. Oh, well, in so many more ways than one. Let's get done with Dear Leader. Now. Another central feature of these of this quartet of speeches, and it'll be a quintet when he gives the next one, right? Right. Another central feature of this is the business. You know, we've heard the reference to, you know, this is just like World War II. 9/11, dear leader. It was Saddam's fault. You know, he's selling. Ain't nobody buying, but he's selling, for God's sakes. But, you know, this next one is the business about him wanting to found an empire.
Yes, that's right.
George would in fact like to found himself an empire.
Sorry, we have a winner. It was Tim Curry.
Very good, very good.
And you will be receiving a T-shirt for that one.
These acts are part of a grand strategy by the terrorists. Their stated objective is to drive the United States and coalition forces out of the Middle East so they can gain control of Iraq and use that country as a base from which to launch attacks against America, overthrow moderate governments in the Middle East, and establish a totalitarian Islamic empire that stretches from Spain to Indonesia.
Okay, that's well and good. Now, think about that. I mean, we've heard it a million. They want to, you know, if you listen, if you watch David Lean's film, Lawrence of Arabia. There's a line in there where someone says, either to Faisal or Faisal says to someone, you know, we still dream of the fountains in in the castles in Spain. And just as I'm convinced that a bunch of Bushistas who don't understand that it's a comedy have watched Dr. Strangelove and think that it's a training film, or have read Catch-22 and think that it's a textbook, the same thing applies to Lawrence of Arabia, the wonderful, wonderful movie. Peter O'Toole, you know, great film, one of my favorites. But statements like that mask the Bush administration's racism. Al-Qaeda, Osama bin Laden, Zawahiri, they don't have enough people to put together the caliphate of Kyrgyzstan, let alone a caliphate that would stretch from Spain to Indonesia. They don't have it. It is simply not possible for them to do it. But we're supposed to be terrified of the spread, not of terrorism, but of Islam. This is what they're about.
Let's see how much he actually understands about what's going on. Hold on a second.
One thing America must never do is lose our capacity to take people from all walks of life and help them become un-American first and foremost.
Un-Americans.
That's what distinguishes us from other cultures and other nations. You can come from wherever you are, and I can come from Texas, and we both share the same deal. We're Americans first and foremost.
Okay, so am I to understand, and that's from the previous speech, that's not today. Am I to understand from that if you move to Germany, you're not German? If you know, I've got a very dear friend that lives just down the mountain, whose little boy, beautiful little fella, holds dual American and German citizenship. Now, am I to understand that he's not German? If you go and you take, you out there, John? If you go and you take Australian citizenship, are you not an Aussie? I mean, what the hell does that mean?
This is the same guy that watches football and goes, yeah, I'm from Texas and you're Sunnis.
Well, you know, he... he took the Iraqi opposition to the Super Bowl, or I had him watch the Super Bowl with him. Oh, my God. But now there's a point here, and I'm going to get back to it. I mean, the tracks of the train are kind of curvy. But look, we're liberals. We're progressives. We do this. And the point here is that this empire that he's trying to terrorize us with, this is has existed before, you know, an Islamic empire that exists from Spain to Indonesia? Damn! Just damn! Because it already exists. And you can practically throw a rock from the Rock of Gibraltar and hit Morocco, and that's a Muslim nation. And it's Muslim all the way across North Africa. It's Muslim in Egypt. There are Muslims in Saudi Arabia, Jordan, Syria, Iraq, Pakistan. Huge Muslim population on the subcontinent of India. There are Muslims in Bangladesh, Indonesia, Malaysia. It already exists. How stupid. And that's, I guess, the theme, isn't it? How stupid do they think we are, or how ignorant of world geopolitics are they? Now I got a college education. I got a little bit of education beyond college. I've got the education that has come to me from a lifetime of voraciously reading books and history. I'm certainly not. I'm not above. God knows I'm not above my audience. You know, that's the beauty of doing liberal talk radio. The audience is as smart or smarter than you are, and you can learn from them far more or as much as they'll ever learn from you. And that being the case, how dumb do they think we are?
here is...
Or are we that dumb, dear? I don't know.
No, here's the major question. What does your religion have to do with your citizenship? Nothing.
Well, it's not supposed to, at least not here. There are certain laws about that.
There are Americans who have converted...
To what?
To being Muslim.
Well, yeah, to Islam, sure.
To Islam. And your religion has nothing at all to do with your citizenship. You can't...
But he didn't say that it does.
In a roundabout way, yes, he is.
Well, you know...
If you listen to him, he picks and chooses very, very carefully.
Well, yeah, I understand. The business about the Sunni from the other speech. Where, yeah, I'm from Texas, you're a Sunni. Jesus. You know, the guy's an American citizen now, but they didn't stop being a Sunni because he became an American citizen. Is that where you're going? Is that what you mean?
Pretty much.
Yeah. I'm from Texas. You're a Sunni.
That's sheer ignorance.
You know, that's, you know.
That's insulting.
I'm white, you're an Eskimo. Or, you know, I'm, you know, you get it? I think you do. But the overarching thing behind this particular soundbite about the, you know, the Islamic empire that stretches from Spain to Indonesia that already exists, the big thing about that is there is one way and only one way that that could ever, 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 ever happen. And the way that that could happen is if someone from outside steps into the Middle East and so thoroughly destabilizes it that that kind of a program can be launched and pursued. Now, I know, brutal dictator gassed his own people. But sure, hate his damn guts. And growing up, not so fond of Marshal Tito either. But Marshal Tito is probably the single best comparison to Saddam Hussein that we have in the 20th century. Under Marshal Tito, arguably, you know, a communist state, not necessarily Stalinist, certainly totalitarian. But under Marshal Tito, you had this agglomerated melting pot nation where the stuff refused to melt. Under Tito's Yugoslavia, you had Serbs, you had Croats, you had Bosnians, Herzegovinans, Albanians, Kosovars, all of whom hated each other's freaking guts. And Marshal Tito said, you know, look, I'll kill you all. I don't care. I'll be the last man here. I'll kill you all if you don't behave and act like Yugoslavians. That is what Saddam did. Hey, you Kurds, settle down. Hey, Shia. It's the same thing. Now, what happened in the former Yugoslavia after Marshal Tito shuffled off this mortal coil? Anybody remember the war? The shelling of Srebrenica? That's what's going to happen in Iraq, too. Because it is going to be horribly destabilized. Anybody remember, you know, I know it's incidental, but does anybody remember Al-Qaeda happening to send fighters to the war in Yugoslavia? Why were they able to do that? Because the former Yugoslavia was destabilized. Why is Zarqawi able to operate in Iraq? He wasn't able to operate in Saddam's Iraq. He's only able to operate in Iraq because we have deliberately destabilized that region and made it possible. Made it possible. For Osama to get a foothold over there. Is this the payback? We got to start the war, he gets to, you know, have a run at a caliphate? I mean, I'm beginning to wonder, I'm not, the conspiracy theory, schmiracy theory. I'm beginning to wonder what the, you know, we need an exit strategy. Sure, I'd like to know what the end game is. What is the end game? What do we get out of it? What do we want out of it? A free and democratic Iraq. Bug spray! There will be no free, there will be no democratic Iraq. It will not happen. It cannot happen. And there was a mention in the speech today, some people think that it can't work because they're not ready for democracy. That was the whole Japan thing. Japan wasn't ready for democracy. They'd already had representative government on some level. And they were not religiously opposed to the idea of democracy. You got to remember, if this nation had been the way that the religion industry tells us it was at the time of the founding of this nation, if this nation had been as religiously insane as they say it was, the Constitution could never have happened. Democracy happens in enlightened, reformed societies that are willing to trust their future to the judgments of their fellow man and not expect magic from up out of the ground or down out of the sky. I mean, that's why you've got, where is it? I saved it, yep. That's why you got quotes like this. I almost shudder at the thought of alluding to the most fatal example of the abuses of grief which the history of mankind has preserved, the cross. Consider what calamities that engine of grief has produced. Or, the way to see by faith is to shut the eye of reason. Lighthouses are more helpful than churches. Those last two are Benjamin Franklin. The first one about the cross is John Adams. John Adams also said, the divinity of Jesus is made a convenient cover for absurdity. Nowhere in the Gospels do we find a precept for creeds, confessions, oaths, doctrines, and whole carloads of other foolish trumpery that we find in Christianity. And then there's, shake off all the fears of servile prejudices under which weak minds are servilely crouched. Fix reason firmly in her seat, and call on her tribunal for every fact, every opinion. Question with boldness even the existence of a God, because if there be one, he must more approve of the homage of reason than that of blind faith. The American Republic could never have arisen in a religiously insane environment.
But there's something simplistic to this. Divide and conquer. But unfortunately, we are being sucked into the vortex along with it.
Right, but the people who want to divide and conquer, and I agree with you wholeheartedly, honey, but the people who want to divide and conquer are the people who hate the republic that Jefferson and Adams and Franklin and the rest of them founded.
Precisely, and that's why people need to stand up and get them out. Get them out as soon as they possibly can before they do any more damage than they already have. But if you lay down and you sit there and go, I don't know what I'm going to do. Oh, this is so awful. Wringing your hands will do no good.
Well, and by the same token, if you sit there and you listen to one of these dear leader speeches when he says, a Muslim empire that stretches from Spain to Indonesia. And you just let that slide by, you're guilty there too.
And if your belief in God is that strong, think about the message. God only helps those who help themselves.
Actually, Franklin said that. The Bible didn't.
If you look through the Bible,
that's not a Bible verse, dear.
If you have faith in God, then you are helping yourself.
Yeah, you've got to have the faith of them. I'm not arguing with you, but that business about God helps them who help themselves.
That did come from Benjamin Franklin.
Yeah, 99% of America think that came from the Bible. It didn't.
Why do you think I said that?
Right, precisely. But anyway, this whole idea that somehow or another some miracle is going to take place in the Middle East, no. I got nothing against Islam, Buddhism, Hinduism, whatever. I got nothing against the Southern Baptist Church except for the fact that they're hateful and mean. But a lot of religion is. And, you know, it's my right as an American to just ignore the hell out of them. So, fine. But what it boils down to, there's not going to be any democracy in Iraq. There is no yen for democracy in Iraq. There is no desire, there is no burning urge for it, because, you know, religion serves, stands in the place where democracy could arise. And democracy can't arise as long as law is being derived from religion. It's the Ten Commandments argument in reverse. We couldn't have had an American republic as if we were trying to force people to live by the Decalogue. It couldn't happen. It's that simple. I tell you, dear, look there among the sound bites. We had some Bill O'Reilly left over. And, you know, this is another example of out and out lying. He was talking about, he just made this crap up. He said in either Saginaw, Michigan, he said it about Saginaw, Michigan, and he said it about Plano, Texas. He's made this claim that the school systems there have forbidden children to wear red and green just because they're Christmas colors. You know, I'm not making this up. Check it out.
In Plano, Texas, just north of Dallas, a school told students they couldn't wear red and green because they were Christmas colors. That's flat-out fascism.
That's a flat-out lie. And the Plano, Texas Independent School District is calling O'Reilly to task for the lie he has made up. He said the same thing about Saginaw, Michigan. Again, it's a damn lie. All right? And he calls that fascism. Now, these people on the right, you know, they haul out their Hitlers and their fascists and their Mussolinis and all of that silly, stupid garbage that they think it is. And they don't have a clue. O'Reilly is part of a fascist machine. And and it's part of a fascist machine that they just make stuff up. They just make stuff up. And it's that kind of thinking, frankly, from the other side of the religious aisle, the extremists in Islam, that will stop democracy. It'll be aborted. At least they, you know, that it won't happen, because that kind of thinking is as prevalent in Iraq as it is in the minds of right-wing monsters here in the United States. I don't know if what I've just said makes a lick of sense. I hope it does. But what it boils down to is when this boob in the White House talks about Muslims building empires, just remember one thing, please. It can't happen. There can be no unified Muslim empire from Spain to Indonesia. And, you know, he picks out Spain because Spain pulled out of his coalition of the billing. That's a veiled threat.
And see, you pulled out. You're not fighting with us in Iraq no more. And you're going to be part of a Muslim empire, and all you Catholics is going to have to get you a prayer rug and point it toward Mecca.
Everything that man says has an undercurrent of hate and threats and fear and bigotry and prejudice. So, please, for heaven's sakes, when you hear stupidity like, you know, empires from Spain to Indonesia, at least remember that it cannot happen or couldn't have happened unless we had started the war. If it's going to happen, its author will not be Osama bin Laden. And the father of the caliphate will not be Ayman al-Zawahiri. The father of that caliphate will be George W. Bush. There's no way around it. It is what it is. And the bloodbath that will become Iraq when... Well, the bloodbath it already is, but the bloodbath that will become even worse when we leave... Until one Islamic sect wins out over another, is also strictly and completely, utterly and totally the handiwork of a man who in March 2003 said he had lost his patience. This is Head On, and I'm Bob Kincaid.
In life for free, but you can give them to the birds and bees. I want money. That's what I want. That's what I want.
That's McGruff, the crime dog, here with my nephew Scruff. Get a pencil and write down an important address. It's for the new McGruff comic activity book.
And it's full of me.
The address is
Scruff McGruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652.
Chicago, Illinois, 60652.
Scruff, McGruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652. Scruff, McGruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652.
It tells you what to do about guns and about bullies and drugs and about strangers who want to give you a ride.
Scruff, McGruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652.
And it's full of games and puzzles, too. So for your free copy of my new comic activity book, just write
Scruff, McGruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652.
Not bad.
Can I do it again?
One more time.
Scruff, McGruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652.
You'll be helping me take a fight on a crime.
A public service message from this station, the U.S. Department of Justice, the Crime Prevention Coalition, and the Ag Council.
On December 8, 1997, our 7-year-old son, Evan, was murdered after signing up for basketball.
It was very devastating. Just very devastating, and the victims program provided the resources for us to get the counseling that we needed.
Alec was also injured. They helped pay for Alec's cornea transplant.
They stood by us through the court process.
If you or someone you love have been a victim of violent crime, there is help available for you.
Crimevictims.gov.
Why should our children learn another language?
Everybody in the world doesn't speak English.
To succeed in this shrinking world, our children will need to communicate in more than one language.
So you could make new friends from different countries.
For our kids' sake, it's time to speak up for language education. Find out how at yearoflanguages.org.
That makes me confident.
Sponsored by the American Council on the Teaching of Foreign Languages.
Children drunk lemonade, and the morning lasted all day, all day. And through an open window came, like Sinatra in a younger day, pushing the town away. He said in winter 1963, it felt like the world would freeze with John F. Kennedy and the Beatles. We never would wave goodbye. You could see it written.
that car while the rain came down. And you sure look fine. Oh, yeah, reading highway signs. And you sure look good up on Crystal Beach. Reeling in them fish with your hair all bleached. And you sure look fine. Hey, yeah, with your hooks and lines. La-da-dee-dum-da, la-da-dee-dum-day. Every move you make, everything you say. You blow my mind, and you sure look good at a rainbow falls. Past the parking lots and all the crowded malls, yeah. And you sure look fine. Mm-hmm. Underneath them pines, la-da-dee-dum-da, la-da-dee-dum-day. Every move you make, everything.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Now, there's just one little last little itty-bitty bit of Dear Leader's speech before the Woodrow Wilson International Center for International Scholars that I'd like for you to hear. And I hope you're not too tired of it. But the last, you remember the speech he made, I think it was before the Naval, it was the speech he made at Annapolis in front of the assembled midshipmen. He talked about the Marine who had been killed in Iraq, and they found a letter home on his laptop. And even then, they had to dummy it up and dodge it up in order to keep the truth out of what the young man said, out of what George Bush said. In other words, in these speeches, he's whoring out dead Marines. And he whored out another dead Marine today. And it's sickening. It just wrenches my guts. Today, he whored out a young man who must have really been somebody special. Honors graduate from William & Mary, was pursuing, according to Dear Leader, a doctorate on a scholarship, a doctorate in chemistry at Stanford, and came home and joined the Marines after 9/11. Ryan McLaughlin, my heart goes out to that family. Even more so now that Dear Leader has tarted him up in his pathetic attempt to justify this bloodthirsty nightmare that he's plunged the world into.
Ryan was killed last month fighting the terrorists near the Iraq-Syrian border.
Fighting the terrorists.
In his pocket was the poem that Ryan had read at his high school graduation. And it represented the spirit of this fine Marine. The poem was called, Don't Quit. In our fight to keep America free, we'll never quit. We've lost wonderful Americans like Ryan McLaughlin. We cherish the memory of each one.
I could cry. I really could. Fighting the terrorists. You know, dear leader won't sit down with Cindy Sheehan. And apparently, he won't sit down with Congressman John Murtha either. Because if he would spend 2 minutes, if he'd spend 1 minute with a hero like John Murtha, he might learn real quick that in Iraq, we're not fighting the terrorists. We're fighting, and we'll be generous to George. I mean, we're fighting the people he calls the insurgents. But see, he can't use insurgents anymore because we all understand, because I assume that a lot of us have now heard that the Iraqis, 60-80% of them, hate our guts, and the reason they're having the bloodshed and the misery and the death is because of the bloodshed and the misery and the death that we have caused. And they are resistance fighters. Within their own home country, they refer to them as freedom fighters because the freedom they want is freedom from us. And if dear leader would spend even 30 seconds with John Murtha, he might find out that it's not about fighting the terrorists. Our own government estimates that, what, less than 7% of the people opposing us in Iraq are terrorists. He talks about the Saddamists and the rejectionists and the dejections and whatever. Yes, dear.
Have you noticed you haven't heard any more from Jessica Lynch?
Or from anybody about, well, now that fraud was exposed. You're exactly right, dear. By the same token, they're not dragging out the bloody corpse of
Tillman.
Pat Tillman anymore.
Who was killed by friendly fire?
He was killed by his own men, just like Stonewall Jackson.
But Jessica Lynch, whom they put her in one of the only trauma beds that they had, who tried to return her to us, and we shot at them.
Yeah, them being the Iraqis. Yeah. No more Jessica Lynch. No more, God knows, no more Lindy England. No more Pat Tillman. No, he's got to drag out people like Ryan McLaughlin. Now, of course, I have a question in regard to Ryan McLaughlin. Did Ryan McLaughlin come home in a cardboard box? Did Ryan McLaughlin's heroic body, you know, dear leader says we cherish each one. Bite me, George. You do not. You send them home in cardboard boxes and unload them with forklifts just like you would so much dog food.
There's something that I've been looking for, and I can't find it. I can't find it anywhere. And if any of you out there can, please let me know. I have not found one member of any family serving in any of the Air Force, Marines.
Any of the armed services, yes.
In any of the armed services. I haven't found them serving there. If you can find someone who has someone in the service there in our government, please let me know. I would really like to know that.
Well, John Ashcroft's kid or grandkid is in the Navy.
Is he in Iraq?
Kind of doubt it.
That's what I'm talking about. Where is he stationed?
Well, I don't know, but there are precious few, and of course John Ashcroft isn't in the government anymore. But some nephew, son, grandson, something like that. is in the military. But the point here, for God's sakes, the point here, is it is easy enough to talk about the heroic sacrifices of the Ryan McLaughlins of this world. But doing them real honor is a lot more complicated than talking about the fact that they were carrying a poem called Don't Quit in their pocket when they were blown to bits fighting this meaningless, idiotic war in Iraq. There's so much more to it than that. And for him being George W. Bush, to just trollop out someone like Ryan McLaughlin, it does. It just puts my guts in knots. Let's take a break. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
You put your keys between your knuckles. You walk in well-lit areas. Stay clear of parked vans. Someone approaches you and you cross to the other side of the street. Your cell phone is ready. The numbers for help saved on speed dial. You lock the door behind you. Once, twice, maybe three times. Now you feel safe, secure. You think you've made the right choices to protect yourself. Think again. Because if you're not making healthy choices, you could be one of the nearly 2 out of 3 women killed by cancer, diabetes, heart disease, or stroke. So eat right, get active, don't smoke, see your doctor, and live. Learn to protect yourself from yourself at 1-866-399-6789 or visit us at everydaychoices.org. A message from the American Cancer Society, American Diabetes Association, American Heart Association, and the Ad Council.
Hey, have you got a minute? I'm going to say a word. You tell me what comes to mind. Are you ready?
Okay.
Tchaikovsky.
Gesundheit. Okay, what's the word?
No, see, that is the word. What does Tchaikovsky make you think of?
I don't know. Allergy season?
Hey there, how you doing?
What's up?
Who's Martha Graham?
She invented the graham cracker.
No kidding.
Yeah. Before her, there was only soda crackers.
Hard to imagine. Hey, young lady.
Yeah?
Does the name Man Ray mean anything to you?
Duh. The Man Ray is a kind of poisonous jellyfish, and it lives in the Gulf of Mexico.
Aha. Uh-huh.
It's very deadly.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Tchaikovsky's music, Martha Graham's dance, and Man Ray's photography. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
Miners and mine operators understand the dangers inherent in working at a mine site. They also know how to avoid those hazards. But will they do it? Hello, I'm Bob Friend with the Mine Safety and Health Administration. Many recent fatalities in the mining industry have resulted from bad safety decisions. For example, one victim fell from an elevated platform because he was not wearing a safety line. Tragedies like this don't have to happen if everyone in the mining workplace thinks about the job and makes the right decision. Safety begins with you. If you're about to perform electrical work, lock out and tag out before you start the work. Make the right decision. If you're a truck driver, you can choose whether to wear the seat belt. Make the right decision. MSHA's message to you is make the right decision in the mining workplace. Decide to be safe. Thank you for listening.
Never live without you by my side, but then I
to get along, and so you're back from outer space. I just walked in to find you.
Thank you. Well, you see, there was a dirty word in there. That's why we always have to listen to all the modern music. Because up until a few years ago, you just didn't get away with the dirty stuff if, well, you wanted to play it on the radio. But now, you know, whatever. So, yeah, we'll find out in a little bit whether or not the dirty word filter worked. This is Wednesday night, and of course, Wednesday night, you know, because we've got our, you know, I come from Southern Sensibilities, and Wednesday night is prayer meeting night. So it is prayer meeting night every Wednesday night here on Head On. And I'd like to open the service, if you don't mind, brethren and sistren. At this time of year, it is fitting and proper that we should turn our attentions to the little town of Bethlehem. Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, which is the home, yea, verily, brethren and sistren, of Lehigh University. And at Lehigh University, it's a fine institution, there was a young man, a student, a sophomore, 19-year-old young fellow by the name of Greg Hogan. And he walked into a Wachovia Bank branch and handed him a note that said he had a gun and wanted money. And for at least a little while, police said he got away with almost $3,000. They picked him up that evening at his fraternity house. Greg Hogan is a cellist in the Lehigh University Orchestra. Students are absolutely amazed that this happened. Classmate Steve Juisti said it's a big question why someone with so much going for him would commit a crime like armed bank robbery. And the editor of the Lehigh student newspaper said, it's by far the most interesting story we've ever encountered here. I guess Bethlehem, Pennsylvania is a sleepy little town. Now, why would I bring... Come on, you know. Why would I bring this up on prayer meeting night? Well, 19-year-old Greg Hogan is president of the sophomore class there at Lehigh University. He's also the son of... wait for it. Come on. The son of a Baptist minister in Barberton, Ohio. I guess maybe some kid was probably dodging Sunday school. If he'd been paying attention to the little old blue-haired ladies, it probably never would have happened. But no, he had to go in and rob a bank. So Greg Hogan, poster child for upstanding Baptist family values parenting, charged with armed robbery of a Wachovia bank branch. And it's only fair. I mean, after all, the Baptist Church is out there hammering tongs after gay marriage because that threatens the American family. Looks to me like Reverend Hogan didn't do such a hot job himself. Or was he just a bad seed? Don't know. So, I don't know. If you're inclined to, say a prayer for Greg Hogan. While you're at it, say a prayer for 22-year-old Matthew Coso. We're moving westward now from Pennsylvania to the rolling plains of the Midwest. Sentencing for Matthew Coso is set for February the 7th. Because, Matthew is 22 years old. Like I said, he faces up to 50 years in prison. He pled guilty this past Tuesday to sexual assault charges after he impregnated and then married a 14-year-old girl. Hey, these are those traditional family values, aren't they? And where did, how did this, what happened? He impregnated her at the age of 14 and then carried her across state lines to, drum roll please, Kansas, where there is no minimum age for marriage. That's right. Kansas, the state that gave us the BTK serial killer. The registered Republican BTK serial killer now gives us Matthew Koso, who began the relationship with the young lady when he was 20 and she was, do the math, 12. Matthew Koso. Now wait. Koso's lawyer, Willis Yosel, has said that the girl's mother and Koso's parents approved of the marriage. The girl's father has not lived with the family for some time. And now that the now that the horse is long gone, Kansas Governor Kathleen Sebelius is demanding that the legislature close the barn door. She wants legislators to establish a strict ban on marriage involving anyone younger than 16. 16? Now, I put this in the same file with letting 16-year-olds drop out of school. And I'm not so sure that... And please, I'm not an old fogey. Yes, dear.
Our kids aren't allowed to date until they're 16, let alone get married. My God, this isn't Kentucky.
Oh, stop! No, this is West Virginia! I think we do have a minimum marriage age, though.
Oh, no, we don't.
But this is Kansas. We're talking here about Kansas. Buckle, you know, right there, one of the holes in the Bible Belt. Kansas, that's so concerned about whether their children learn about evolution instead of elephants standing on turtles all the way down, flying spaghetti monster, anything but science. But and God knows we, you think maybe it might have been nice to teach something besides abstinence only to this poor little girl. Because, of course, you know, when you're dealing with statutory rape, which is what this is, consent is not an issue. Because when you're younger than X age, you're incapable of consent by virtue of the age. I mean, you get that. So, Kansas. Kansas that can expend thousands upon thousands of taxpayer dollars to fight lawsuits over whether or not we're going to use biology class to teach that, Adam and Eve rode to church on the back of a dinosaur, blah, blah, blah. They can spend thousands of dollars in that line, but can't bring themselves to teach a little 12-year-old girl. And yeah, apparently in 21st century Kansas, we need to teach the 12-year-old little girls that condoms will stop pregnancy.
Do you think it might have been better to teach the 20-year-old man not to touch a 12-year-old girl?
Well, I'm right there with you, dear. And in all fairness, this started in Nebraska. Okay? But in Nebraska, 22-year-old dudes can't marry 14-year-old girls. However, you can in Kansas. Hey, maybe, look at, hey, there's a slogan for their new tourism campaign. Putting the can back in Kansas.
You know,
bring your 12-year-old brides here.
They are giving away land in Kansas, so I guess they need to propagate the species
up. Let's take a break, dear. I don't think we can stand much more. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
First thing I remember knowing was a lonesome whistle blow. Freight train leaving town, not knowing where I've been. No one can change my mind, but mama tried.
Hey, friends, Eric Estrada here. Just like you, I'm really into engines, but there's something else that I'm into even more, taking care of the planet. I bet you didn't know that motor oil from one oil change dumped in a drain or on the ground can contaminate 1 million gallons of fresh water. That means that if we don't recycle it, we could be drinking it. So take your used oil to your nearest recycling center or call toll-free 1-800-CLEANUP. Remember, if you dump it, you'll drink it.
Want to fight childhood asthma? Then fight it with a scrub brush and a hot soapy towel. Even in the neatest and tidiest homes, if there's so much as a crumb to eat or a drop to drink, household pests like bugs and mice will do all that they can to get it. Creepy crawlies like bugs and mice are unpleasant enough as it is, but they're more than just a nuisance for kids with asthma because they can actually trigger an asthma attack. So, give them a whole lot of nothing. Sweep up crumbs, wipe down tables, scrub dishes before they pile up in the sink, and store leftovers in plastic bags or bowls. Don't leave them so much as one tidbit or nibble, and you can stop a childhood asthma attack before it starts. Discover other simple ways to prevent an asthma attack. Call 1-866-NO-ATTACKS or visit noattacks.org, because no child should feel like a fish out of water. A public service message brought to you by the U.S. EPA, the Ad Council, and this station.
Dad, can I ask you something?
Sure.
There's this girl I kind of like.
Say no more.
You just have to impress her. Okay, but how?
Just, I don't know, pick up a lot of heavy things around her.
Like what?
You know, desks, chairs, people. Grunt if you have to.
Grunt?
Yeah, be like, There you go.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. When you adopt a child from foster care, just being there makes all the difference. To learn more, call 1-888-200-4005. A public service announcement brought to you by Adopt U.S. Kids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back. Nice little interlude there. Call it 23 minutes before the hour, and that leaves about, 20 minutes or so for us to cuss and discuss the evening away. And let's go back to the phones. Jim had another thought for us. Hey, Jim, you're head on.
Thought, but it's just a, how do you do? I see you've met my
faithful handyman.
And you put just a little buck down. Handyman.
Exactly. Yeah, that was Tim Curry, the I Do the Rock that we played earlier. Agnes ran across that, and I was like, wow.
Well, you know, he's quite an accomplished Shakespearean actor, too.
He's as good as they come.
Absolutely. And I was just telling Agnes, I mean, we used to have a lot of fun dressing up to go to that movie. Probably, you know, if you dressed up, you got in free.
Right. And it showed on many a Saturday, Friday and Saturday at midnight all across the country. I guess they don't do that anymore.
No, the 70s were a fun time, let me tell you. The 80s were too. But, I mean, I just thought I was... Times have changed, have they not?
They indeed have. They indeed have.
Well, I hope y'all don't get too much ice out there. Have you heard anything?
So far, so good, but... You know, I hate the snow, but I can tolerate it a lot easier than I can the cussed ice, because that brings down power lines.
Absolutely. Well, you hadn't had any offers to help anybody move, had you?
No, oddly enough, I realize that you put that out there, but no, nobody's called for help.
Well, just trying to sit in my little house by the side of the road and be a
friend to man.
That's it.
That's exactly it. Thanks, Jim.
Good night.
Take care. And, a little more prayer meeting stuff for you. I got, you know, I only do the really good poems, because a lot of people aren't turned on by poetry. But I got one for you, and I must share it with you. Okay, what, did I miss something? It's the holiday season, so. 'Twas the night before solstice. And all through the land, the ACLU was watching to keep things in hand. The children were nestled all snug in their beds while forces kept Christmas out of their heads. When out on the lawn there arose such a clatter, I sprang from my bed and heard desperate chatter. Someone had seen my manger display and wailed very loudly, "Go away, go away." How could I be so crass, so utterly wrong, so to show the infant Jesus and sing him a song? I'm going to cry. And then, in a twinkling, I heard on the roof an ACLU lawyer looking stern and aloof. "No manger, no caroling," he said with a snort. "And if you don't comply immediately, I'll take you to court." He was chubby and plump, a right surly old elf, and I laughed when I saw him in spite of myself. He dallied no more, but went straight to his phone, lamenting the manger in most pitiful moan. But in the spirit I said nothing unkind. Christmas is for... Oh, please. This thing is making the right-wing rounds. This is the night before solstice, not by Clement Clark Moore. No. No, this is the night before solstice by... Come on, you know... Yeah, Bill O'Reilly. The man who wanted to sexually assault a woman and, you know, said so on tape. Sexually assault a woman with a falafel. That fried chickpea goodness from the Middle East. That line, the ACLU was watching to keep things in hand. Has it ever occurred to this doofus that if someone tried to stop him from putting a manger on his lawn, the ACLU would be the ones who were there screaming and raising hell to protect his very right to do it? How far down in the Ten Commandments, depending on which version you're looking at, how far down is thou shalt not bear false witness? I mean, this guy has screamed for years now about the Ten Commandments, and I don't think the man has ever observed one of them. You know, this business about, children in the school district in Plano, Texas and Saginaw, Michigan are not allowed to wear red and green. Did it ever occur to that miserable piece of human garbage, that there are schools in this country where children aren't allowed to wear red and green? And in many instances, those are Catholic schools whose colors are not red and green, and that wearing red and green to school will get them thrown out of school there. Not in the public schools of Saginaw, Michigan, or Plano, Texas, but yeah, because he talks about what a good practicing Roman Catholic he is, it never occurred to O'Reilly that there are schools where red and green are banned, and they are in large part religious schools where the colors are chosen for the children. I got one more sound clip from Doofus O'Reilly. It's this is about the red and green business. This is what O'Reilly would do if they told him he couldn't wear red and green at Christmas.
If I were a student in Plano, I'd be a walking Christmas tree after that order. I have a little thing on my head.
Bill, buddy, you've got a little thing on your head. It's your little tinfoil Christmas helmet. Or maybe the little thing is your head, because God knows you've got a brain the size of a walnut, just like a dinosaur. And how many, again, this goes back to the question I asked earlier. Do they think we're stupid, or are they so stupid they themselves can't comprehend? And I don't ask that rhetorically. I'd like to know which direction this country's going in. The story that I related, that Wayne had related to me, about the little old lady who doesn't give a damn whether or not somebody working at Walmart makes a living wage, but, you know, they won't say Merry Christmas, I'll never go in there again.
Well, I've been to one world fair, a picnic, and a rodeo, and that's the stupidest thing I ever heard come over a set of earphones.
Now, you want some real prayer meeting stuff? Here's some prayer meeting stuff. Here is a story from the Los Angeles Times. And oddly enough, there's, you know, I read it. I've looked through it a couple of times. Not a word from the Right to Life movement. It's a national first. Yay, it's a first. It's a national first. It's never happened before in this nation. Regardless of the status or quality of our medical system, more than 12% of all births in the United States now are premature. More than 12% of all births in the United States are premature. Bear in mind that our infant mortality statistics lag behind Cuba and are the last in the civilized world. According to government statistics released this fall, the number of American babies born prematurely last year topped a historic 500,000 mark. Hospital costs alone for preemies totaled $18.1 billion in 2003, according to the March of Dimes. Chew on that for a minute. Let it settle in for just a few. And by premature, it's anything from 37 weeks backwards. Premature babies have incredible problems later in life. Respiratory problems, heart problems. And a significant segment of this country, let's go all the way back to the beginning of the program. You know, Sherman set up the Wayback Machine for 7:10. And the Washington Post story that Peter was kind enough to send me. There it is. Go all the way back to Paul Hetrick, spokesman for Focus on the Family. Paul Hetrick said in regard to the protests today in Washington by members of religion who actually try to follow the teachings of Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian carpenter, saying of their protests to object to $100 million cuts in the food stamp program while we're upping the ante on the war to kill more babies in Iraq and kill babies we have done with reckless abandon. Speaking of that protest, Paul Hetrick, spokesman for Focus on the Family, said, oh, God, I can hardly stand to let the words come out of my mouth. That it's a matter of priorities, and the priorities are abortion, same-sex marriage, and seating judges who will back their position against people who would speak up for the poor, the same poor that Christ walked amongst. One more time, sunshine. It's a matter of priorities, and those priorities are abortion, same-sex marriage, and seating judges. Those priorities do not include little babies who happen to be alive but are so small they will fit in the palm of your hand, because those babies have already been born and they are now off the radar with the religion industry. They're off the radar for James Dobson and his Focus on the Family. Off the radar is the mommy and the daddy who run the risk of losing jobs, whose whole lives come apart trying to take care of a baby that will fit in the palm of your hand. They don't matter to Focus on the Family. They don't matter to Coral Snake Ministries in Florida. They don't matter to Pat Robertson and his Let's Go Kill Somebody Quick 700 Club. They don't matter to Jerry Falwell, who could swallow a baby that size in one gulp. They don't matter. And, of course, if you try to speak up,
what about the unborn babies? Who will speak for them? I am Donald Wildman, and I will speak for them.
No, you don't, you heathen. Who will speak for the 24-week baby? Who will speak for the medical care that child requires? You know, unfortunately, that 24-week baby in the neonatal intensive care unit can't give a political donation to his congressman and get the congressman's ear. Hell, the baby can't talk yet.
Yeah.
I loathe these people. I despise these people. Bill O'Reilly is writing parodies of The Night Before Christmas and complaining about whether people wear red or green. John Gibson is writing books about Christmas being taken out of the public square. Tell you what. We don't know if Mary was full term when she entered that stable in Bethlehem. We don't know if little baby Yeshua was full term. We know that... What's the line from Away in a Manger? I can't remember.
No crib for a bed.
Well, that's a start. No neonatal intensive care unit. And you know what? If it was good enough for baby Jesus, it's good enough. According to James Dobson, Falwell, Robertson, all those creepy Wildman, Anthony Perkins of the American Family Association, it's good enough for the babies today. You know, there's a line in here, my God, hear it. Dobson has also praised what he calls, and I quote, better get ready there, Agnes. Dobson has praised what he calls pro-family tax cuts. Is it pro-family when there's not enough money to fund the medical care of that already born 26, 28, 30-week premature infant? Is that a pro-family tax cut?
Okay, Bob, before you have a stroke here, okay, here's the way it goes. You have a preemie. They bring the papers in because there's a drug called surfaxin.
I know all this, dear.
Hold on. But the listeners might not. And they give you a pile of papers. And quite honestly, at that moment, you don't read them. You sign away your life. You don't know what you're signing away because your baby's there and it needs it. Be it boy, be it girl. You sign away everything so that your child has a chance. Then when your child dies, in walks a minister that has the audacity to look at you and tell you, well, the baby's with Jesus and you'll see it again someday, or you can have more. Let me tell you, people, that's not what someone wants to hear.
Well, it probably isn't. I have no doubt. Now, Janice Krause, a senior fellow at the Christian group Concerned Women for America, said, religious conservatives know that the government is not really capable of love. And they are. You know, call me crazy. I was paying attention in that civics class, ninth grade, when they talked about how the government is not in Washington, but the government is us, each and every one of us, and that the people in Washington are only our elected representatives who are there doing our bidding. Is it our bidding? And this I truly want to know. Is it our bidding that we should spend $500 billion killing babies and women and children and non-combatant men in Iraq, and cut $100 million out of the food program for the poor here in America? Is that our bidding? Is that our will? You look to the government for justice, and you look to the church and individuals for mercy. Are there enough? Is there enough money in the churches that they could cover all the needs for all the preemies in the United States? Especially now that it's gone to 12% of all births. Why don't we ask? Tell them it's what Jesus would do. No, Jesus wants a tax cut. This is so offensive to me. Last Christmas, we had the story over here in Beckley of the 5-day-old little boy who froze to death because the gas company executives had the woman's gas cut off. This year, I find out through the good offices of the Los Angeles Times that 12% of all births are now premature. And there are hateful, hateful people like Janice Krause of the Concerned Women for America. We all know the government is not really capable of love. You know, that I've told you time and again, they hate this form of government. That is the proof. They do not believe that we, the people, are the government of this United States. Because you know what? That hag has just damned herself. Because you know what? If we live in a country where the government is not capable of love, then we have damned ourselves as well. Because if the government is not capable of love, we are not capable of love. Because again, I say unto you, yea, verily, we are the government. Whew. Well, Another prayer meeting edition by the boards. Thanks for being around. I appreciate the email. I appreciate the phone calls. I appreciate the time you just spend with us. We'll be back tomorrow night again, same time as usual. The show tonight, of course, was produced by my lovely wife, Agnes. It was announced by Brian Reznor, engineered by Randy Kerbway. Our dear, dear friend, Ben Birch, maintains the stream and the archives of this and many other liberal programs. And he does it all without charging a nickel. If you've got a little to share, share it with Ben. The show, of course, is brought to you every night the West Virginia Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. They are building the American dream. And always, 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 RMR, it's all for you.